worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
All right. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Macabre, a dark history podcast. My name is Holly.
I'm Blair.
And on today's episode, we have some very special guests with us. Many of our listeners probably know them because they actually found us through this podcast. We have Nick and Jake joining us from America Scaryland today.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Bonjour.
Hello.
Yeah. And then I
was not on another podcast. Drinking
you were.
For 2 hours.
Lies. The letter T is for tabloids. And we're going to be talking about sensational stories from the Victorian era. And I'm going to go through the stories and you're going to decide if the story is true or if it is false. So fact or fake.
I'm so excited.
And then Blair is going to open us up with all of the lovely housekeeping items so we can keep it clean in here before we get started.
Oh, yeah. Snap those gloves on. It's going to be quick. So today, for our housekeeping, if you want a little more from us, we are on Patreon where you can listen early and ad free. All of our links are in the show notes. For listeners, we have a private Facebook group. If you haven't joined, please do so. It's a growing fam and we want to have you over there as well. So make sure you do that. And if you like what you're hearing, please leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to tell a friend because we've got a lot of friends on this episode and it means a lot to us. So spread the freaking word, all right? Whispered in the bathroom.
Or at the urinal, you know, for our male listeners at the urinal. Just lean over.
There too.
I don't know what the etiquette is, actually, for that.
Yeah.
So.
Whatever brings you joy, spread the word.
Yeah.
But don't be weird about it. That weird.
Do be weird about it.
Get your advertising.
That's weird.
Yeah, we don't have that. We don't have anything that exciting.
No. I mean, you're probably going to... good chunk of people, but like, you know how a lot of surveys now are like, hey, how did you find us? Are you gonna put saw you at the urinal, you know?
I would love that though if actually somebody was like, I found you guys while I was reading an advertisement above the urinal. I'd be like, yes.
Finally. No, just kidding.
We've made it. All right, well, I have some hype notes for you guys. It's going to be a little bit long-winded, so bear with me. Ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. So I have to set the stage a little bit for what was going on during the Victorian era and why these stories were so sensational, you know, why that existed in the first place. So let's get into it. The Victorian era wasn't just a time of industrial progress and gaslit streets. It was also the golden age of something called yellow journalism. Have you heard of that?
Ooh,
anyone?
No.
Okay. Yellow journalism was where newspapers thrived on scandal, crime, and outright fabrication. Legitimately, this was the first time that tabloids were really a thing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, literacy rates were at an all-time high, and the competition between publishers was fierce. So the press discovered a simple truth. The more shocking the headline, the more the papers would sell at this time. So obviously, murder trials, gruesome deaths, supernatural sightings, and outlandish hoaxes filled the front pages, blurring the line between fact and fiction. From Jack the Ripper's Reign of Terror to phantom airships and whispering corpses, Victorian tabloids knew how to feed the public's appetite for the macabre. Some stories were real, others were pure invention. But in an era before fact-checking, people believed every gory detail. So tonight, we're diving into the most sensational, bizarre, and downright unbelievable headlines of the Victorian era. Were they true or just masterfully crafted lies? I'm going to let you guys be the judge.
Oh, I can't wait.
So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a story and then I'm going to let you decide after each of the stories whether you think it's fact or fiction.
Cool.
We good on that?
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay. So we're going to start with a curious tale of Edward Mordrake. And Blair, I know you've heard this one before because you posted it on the Facebook group.
Yep.
But let's dig in a little further into this macabre tale. Imagine looking into a mirror and seeing your reflection scowling at you, not in some metaphorical, I hate my life kind of way, but in a very literal, your face is actively mocking you way. That, according to the story, was the daily nightmare of Edward Mordrake. He was a Victorian nobleman who allegedly suffered from a most unusual affliction, a second face on the back of his head. Now, if you're thinking, oh, like Voldemort on Quirrell's head, you're not far off. But unlike J.K. Rowling's creation, Edward's second face wasn't some dark lord bent on world domination. It was more like an insufferable roommate he could never evict. According to the legend, the face, described as unsettlingly beautiful, never spoke in the conventional sense, but was constantly moving, twitching, and worst of all, whispering. What did it whisper about? No one knows for sure, but reports say it muttered things like, "Only spoken in hell," which in Victorian England could have mean anything from blasphemy to an awkward dinner party faux pas. Whatever the case, the voice was relentless, tormenting Edward day and night. When he laughed, it sneered. When he cried, it smirked. When he tried to sleep, it murmured sinister nothings in his ear. And unlike your annoying coworker who never shuts up, Edward couldn't just put on a noise-canceling headphone and ignore it. Desperate for relief, Edward sought out every physician, surgeon, and quack doctor he could find, begging them to remove his demon twin, even if it meant risking his life. But medicine in the 1800s wasn't exactly cutting edge. These were the days when people thought leeches could cure depression, and cocaine was a perfectly acceptable baby teething remedy. Despite his pleas, no doctor was willing to operate. Eventually, unable to bear the torment, Edward is said to have taken his own life at the age of 23, leaving behind a chilling note with one final request. Bury me in an unmarked grave, but destroy the other face first, lest it keeps whispering even after I'm dead. Creepy, right?
Yes.
A tragic tale of a man plagued by his own body. Or is it? Here's where things get interesting. Edward Mordrake's story first appeared in an 1895 newspaper article published in the Boston Sunday Post. The article, written by a man named Charles Lowton Hildreth, listed several so-called medical oddities, except none of them, including Edward, seemed to have existed anywhere outside of that article. The source, a mysterious Royal Scientific Society, which, fun fact, didn't exist either. Despite its questionable origins, Edward's story took on a life of its own, making its way into medical encyclopedias, literature, and even pop culture. To this day, many people believe he was real, but medical experts have pointed out no known condition matches Edward's supposed affliction. So, was this a real-life horror story or just a well-crafted hoax? That's up to you to decide.
I think it was a hoax.
I don't know if it was a hoax or not, but I definitely heard this story before. So, but I could see it being something that was made up, maybe exaggerated.
And also, we'll preface by saying that we recorded another episode prior to this and we've all been drinking.
So, yes.
Soda. Yeah. I mean, enough sodas. You know, and some sugar. I think he said he had some sugar too before we started, but
one of us has to be an adult.
Well, sorry to disappoint, but this story is fake.
Yeah.
Yeah. The story of Edward Mordrake first appeared in an article titled The Wonders of Modern Science by Charles Lowton Hildreth, as I mentioned before, published in the Boston Sunday Post on December 8th of 1895. This article described various alleged human freaks, including Edward Mordrake, and cited the Royal Scientific Society as its source. But that society didn't actually exist. The following year, in 1896, the story was included in included in the Medical Encyclopedia, Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine by George M. Gould and Walter Pyle, which reprinted Hildreth's account with additional verification. This story became so popular in the late 19th century and early 20th centuries because it tapped into several key cultural fascinations of the time, particularly curiosity about medical anomalies. As our listeners might know from some of the episodes we've covered in the past, the Victorians were obsessed with the macabre, and there was a growing popularity of freak shows and human oddities during this time frame. So the story of Edward Mordrake was a perfect example of a little something called yellow journalism.
That's wild. I know I posted that in the Facebook group, like you said, I think it was last week, and I'm like, the first thing I thought of was they made that horror movie about it, and it was more recently, and then somebody did tell me what it was, and I was like, oh, that's right, because I saw that.
But what if it was true?
Oh my gosh, no way.
Because conjoined twins, I mean, that's a thing, right? So yeah. It's not unreasonable to think that you couldn't have that sort of dynamic, right?
Right.
With a conjoined twin.
I couldn't live like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool story, though. It would make it.
It is a cool story. So kudos to the writer, because they sold some newspapers for sure. Mm-hmm. And it.
Yeah, it came out in like the late teens, probably. And I can't remember the name of it again, but it's about this woman that. They think that she's like schizophrenic or something because she's like taking on different personalities and hearing things, and then it changes. I won't give too much away if you haven't seen it, but
yeah. But it wasn't based on his life, though. It was just like
the condition.
A take on. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. We'll Google it. I'm sure people can find it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this next story is called The Sleepwalker Who Cheated Death. And this was published in the Illustrated Police News in 1897. And it tells the harrowing tale of a young Clara Dalrymple who happened to be afflicted with a serious case of sleepwalking, also known as somnambulance, back in the Victorian era. And apparently back in those days, this was very a common occurrence. And in Clara's case, she happened to walk out of an open window four stories high, but she didn't fall out of the window to her death because at the time of the occurrence, construction was going on and there was just so happened to be a wooden plank that led across to the building right across the street. And some workers had been doing some construction there, so they put the plank in place so they could get back and forth, kind of like a scaffolding.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the scene. Clara steps out of the window at night, and her feet are carefully moving along the wooden plank as horrified onlookers down below witness the event. Somehow, she makes it safely to the other side. The article also includes an illustration of the event, hence the name of the newspaper, Illustrated Police News. Because that's how you'll sell newspapers back in the day, right? Especially when there are so many illiterate people, they relied on the illustrated images to tell the story. So this, if you look it up, you can actually find the article and the whole like illustration of what happened. It shows a beautiful young woman dressed in a flowing nightgown with a lit candle in hand, eyes closed, carefully balancing on a wooden plank four stories high as if she were part of some kind of high wire circus performance act. So, what do you think? Fact or faked?
Oh, I used to sleepwalk real hard when I was a kid. I'm gonna take a risk and say fact.
Okay.
Well, if Looney Tunes taught me anything, this really happened. So I will also, I'm going to say fact.
Okay, Nick. Okay, so you're all wrong.
Oh, okay.
Dang it, Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. So, and here's why. Those horny Victorians had some weird fetishes. We already know that, right?
Oh, no.
And one of them happened to be a fixation on beautiful women scantily clad parading around in their almost see-through nightgowns in the middle of the night with their big bosoms just heaving out. So, let's face it. The only way you were going to see a woman looking so racy during the Victorian era, unless she was a lady of the night, was presenting it in this way. So this article was a way to bring that prudish Victorian woman into the spotlight of sexual desire without being too obscene. So it wasn't uncommon to see these type of stories in the newspapers. Yeah.
That is wild.
Sex sold. Oh, and they added a little mystery and sensationalism in the mix. And, you know, you've got yourself some sexy selling newspaper articles. All right. So is this one going to be true or false? Are we ready for the next one?
Oh,
what yes. if they're all fake? And I'm just like, ha.
I mean, I would laugh at the end.
All right. Well, our next story is that of the real life vampire autopsy of Mercy Brown. It's the winter of 1892. Providence Journal reported a strange occurrence. A group of men had gathered together in a local Rhode Island cemetery, but they weren't there to mourn the loss of a recently deceased loved one. No, this was something far more morbid. They were gathered together to dig up the graves of who they believed were a family of vampires. First, they exhumed the remains of Mary Eliza Brown. She had died 8 years earlier, a victim of consumption, more commonly known as tuberculosis. Her body appeared in a strange state to the men. It looked as if it were partially mummified. Next, they set to the task of digging up Mary's eldest daughter, Mary Olive, who had also succumbed to the same disease just a short time after her mother. All that remained of her corpse was bone and hair. And finally, the youngest daughter of Mary, a 19-year-old Mercy, was removed from the family's crypt. She had died just 2 months prior to the exhumation. The strange state and lively appearance of the elder Mary's body alarmed the men. This look of preservation was viewed as a sign of vampirism at the time. And so the men called up the local medical examiner to do an autopsy right there in the middle of the cemetery. The medical examiner removed organs and found them to be in the condition of a human and even cut open the heart to find blood still inside. But this did not satisfy the men to find blood still within the heart. So what did they do? They set the heart on fire. This was believed to provide protection to Mary's brother, Edwin, from joining her in the grave, as he was also suffering from consumption at the time. Sadly, Edwin died 6 weeks later. Is this story fact or faked?
I kind of want to say fact because of things we've talked about on the show before.
Elaborate.
So there were a lot of superstitions back in the time where, well, okay, look at Romania, but it spread from Romania as well. You're also talking about the time where Dracula was like very, very popular. There was a craze going on with the novel at the time. And we look at when you would do autopsies or you'd open up a coffin, again, you would see nails grown, hair grown. Sometimes you would see blood in the mouth or anything like that. That would be just natural signs of decomp. So I feel like this would potentially be true just because there were really big fears and superstitions about that being a thing. The burning of the heart, though, was a little different. But I'll say
fact. Had to be sure. They had to be sure.
Right? I'll say fact for giggles.
This 100% happened. I've actually I've read on the like this story for sure.
Oh, okay.
This definitely happened. This I have like a weird fascination with the whole like ancient, not ancient, but like they're with people, the belief in vampires so much that they like buried with like crosses in their mouth, or like they put rods mm-hmm. in their and stuff, and just or stones even, and the whole idea that they believed it was so gonna happen.
Yeah,
they prep for it is just fascinating to me, given yeah. that there is zero actual evidence that it ever
the like mania just, surrounding it is pretty yeah. wild.
They fully committed to it is nuts.
Yeah. All right. So this one is true. The Providence Journal reported on Mercy Brown's exhumation and autopsy, but was skeptical of the idea that she was a vampire. But the story is actually true. Folklorist Michael Bell has spent his career tracking these vampire panics. To date, he's documented 86 vampire autopsies in the U.S. since 1784. He prefers the term therapeutic exhumations, but believes many more went unrecorded. There was a misunderstanding of consumption during this time period, and the disease gave the appearance akin to a vampire, among other things. Here's a quote from the Atlas Obscura that sums up the misunderstanding pretty well. When an exhumed body's hair, fingernails, and even teeth appear to have grown, when its complexion is ruddy and its skin is warm to the touch, when blood can still be found in the heart, is that not evidence of continued life? When the dirt above a grave has been disturbed and the body has moved in its coffin, is it not logical to conclude that the undead have risen? And when there is blood on its smirking lips and it appears to have gained weight in the grave, is it not right to fear that it is a vampire that has been feeding upon the living? End quote.
The creepiest part of this is the fact that a lot of this is based off the amount of false burial that they did.
Oh, yeah.
And that they're like, oh, they're totally vampires. And it's like, no, you just buried someone who wasn't dead yet.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And here's a fun little morbid fact for you. Anyone want to take a guess when the last vampire exhumation happened?
Are we just talking guess. U.S. or anywhere in the world?
Just let's say U.S.
Okay, U.S.
1963.
You're still believing in vampires in 2014.
Twilight came out.
It's true.
I'm going to say the 30s.
So the last documented vampire exhumation in the U.S. was in 1949 in Pennsylvania. So we're talking after World War II, people.
That's crazy.
Speaking of buried alive.
Oh.
This one is called Buried Alive in Brooklyn. And this is the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, February 28th, 1904. And this story plays on one of the greatest fears of the Victorian era, as we know, a fear so real, so widespread, that it led to the invention of coffins equipped with escape hatches, breathing tubes, and bells to ring from beyond the grave. But was this terrifying tale one of truth, or just another sensationalized story from an era obsessed with death? So let me set the scene for you. The year is 1851. And young Virginia McDonald is lying in her bed in Manhattan, struck down with a sudden illness. The doctors do all they can, but within days she succumbs, or at least so it seems. Her grieving family holds a funeral and buries her in Brooklyn's Greenwood Cemetery, where she is laid to rest in her family's crypt. But her mother, overcome with grief and a gnawing sense of unease, refuses to accept that her daughter is truly gone. Quote, she's not dead. She insists to anyone who will listen. She can't be. At first, her pleas are dismissed as the ravings of a woman unwilling to accept loss. But she is relentless. She begs. She sobs. She demands that Virginia's coffin be opened. Finally, after days of her protests, cemetery workers pry open the lid of the sealed coffin, and the sight inside is the stuff of horrors. Virginia's body is no longer lying in peacefully inside the casket. Instead, her face is contorted in terror, her fingers are bloody, her fingernails are broken from desperately clawing at the inside of the coffin to tear her way out. In a desperate attempt to escape, she has even bitten the flesh from her own arms. She has truly been buried alive. The story spread quickly, feeding into the already rampant fear of premature burial. It was cases like this that led to the rise of safety coffins, wake watches, and even graves rigged with bells to prevent another soul from meeting such a nightmarish fate. But here's where the story takes a turn. Did Virginia McDonald ever really exist? What do you think? Fact or faked?
I feel like I've heard this one before, too. That's why I'm like, I'll go with fact because I've heard it before. And I can't remember if I heard that it was true or not. So I'll go fact.
So if this was just straight up, if someone had been buried alive, I would say fact. But this particular one screams like urban legend to me. So I'm going to go fake.
While newspapers from the 19th century were notorious for publishing sensationalist, fear-inducing stories, finding solid historical records of Virginia McDonald's case is very difficult. Some resources claim that her tale is true, citing period accounts of her mother's distress and the gruesome details of her exhumation. Others believe that the entire story was fabricated or exaggerated to stoke the flames of the Victorian taphophobia, the mass paranoia that anyone could be mistakenly declared dead. Basically, no one really knows if this one is true or not. So this is a maybe. But regardless, if Virginia McDonald was a real person or not, we know the Victorians were terrified of being buried alive, and they had very good reason to fear that because it happened all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
Research performed toward the end of the 19th century indicated that approximately 700 cases of being buried alive had been documented. And this took place in every major city, in small towns, and all across the world. And those are only the documented cases.
That's awful.
I feel like a lot of them were just poor. I mean, they just didn't really have the tools to properly diagnose that someone was dead, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then certain diseases made you catatonic and made you give off the appearance that you were dead, right? So remember the one we talked about in the idioms episode, Blair, what was her name? Olivia Hatcher from Kentucky. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And her husband was like, he just got this really bad feeling like she wasn't dead. And when they went to go pull her like coffin lid off, she had all of those things, like the broken fingernails and the bloody hands. And then also you hear about the coffin births. Like that's a thing that happened.
Yep.
Like women that were buried alive pregnant and then woke up, and then the stress of them coming to in the coffin forced them into early labor. So not only were they buried alive, but then they gave birth inside of the coffin and the baby died too.
Yeah, no. No, 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 no. Straight out of the nightmares.
Yeah. And yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm. Sounds terrible.
Yeah.
That one just seems too icky. That, like, society, that's not pop.
No, we like tangents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are actually the only stories that I pulled for this particular episode, and most of them were fake. So sorry, but like that's how it was during the Victorian era. They like talked a lot of shit. They made up a lot of stuff. But
I do wish this was our fake news, though. I'd rather be reading the fake news of like vampiric autopsies and stuff.
And that was the one that was real.
That's what I want to read. Like, yeah, did you hear in Boston they had a zombie? It's crazy.
I would be interested. It would be interesting to do a Patreon episode or something similar with headlines But the sad thing is, I think a lot of them now are true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really scary. So, like, what was the one we talked about where the facility got busted for all the body parts?
Oh.
The chop shop?
Yep.
Did you guys hear about that?
I didn't.
Yeah. So there was... I'm going to look it up now.
I've just never heard of, like, oh, they're cutting up humans. It was a chop shop. Like, that to me is a thought that I'm like, I've never had that thought before.
I got to pull it up now. Let's see.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. some nasty ones.
Human chop shop case. $58 million verdict reached. So back in 2018.
Oh.
The 19. And this happened in Phoenix, Arizona. A Maricopa County Superior Court jury has awarded $58 million to 10 of the 21 plaintiffs who claim the bodies of their loved ones were mishandled by a Phoenix body donation center operating as an alleged human chop shop.
Jeez.
Family members claim the remains of loved ones were obtained through false statements by the now shuttered Biological Resource Center in Phoenix. The plaintiffs say body parts were sold for profit and that they were not stored, treated, or disposed of with dignity or respect.
Wow.
Yeah. This person who was accused, last name was Gore. Fitting. Gore's business was accused of fraud by claiming that the donated bodies would be used for medical research when it knew some of the remains would be sold for military testing, such as crashes and explosions. What the fuck?
That's crazy.
It became, but still, you gotta notify people.
I'm reading an article on this. They found one that had a head sewn to a body in a Frankenstein-like manner.
Yes. Yeah, what? They did some weird shit. So they found 281 heads, 337 legs, and 97 spines. The bodies were cut up with chainsaws, and pools of human blood and bodily fluids were found on the floor in the freezer with no identification tags on the bodies. And this guy pleaded guilty to illegal control of an enterprise. That's all he got.
What? That's it?
That's Al Capone with his taxes right there. That's
yeah.
Great. Yeah.
I don't know. He pled guilty to that charge. So whatever that charge, whatever sentence comes along with that charge, illegal control of an enterprise.
Wow. It's
gotta be a felony, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, my understanding was that it was more than just like the illegal aspect. Like Jake was saying, they did some weird Frankenstein shit stuff with the bodies.
And it's weird because reading this, it sounds like, at least from all the articles, they didn't actually get him on any criminal charges. It was all a
civil lawsuit. Yeah. Yeah. I guess there really isn't a law in place. They're like, we don't expect this to happen, so we don't really have a law in place for it.
Well, technically, there's been cases where, like, they couldn't get somebody that, like, killed somebody or watched them kill somebody on a criminal charge other than, like, not reporting a death. So it's, like, a weird thing of, like, once a body's dead, there's only a few laws in place that actually
protect
fall like criminal. Yeah. And so, like, technically, he didn't watch them die. He reported the bodies were dead. He just was doing some weird stuff after that.
Oh, dumb rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just trying to make a profit off of it.
Yeah. Really. That's crazy.
Yeah. One of the other articles that seems very sensational that is more recent is that article about the 21 human feet that keep washing up on shore that are inside sneakers.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that.
I heard about that.
Yeah, I think I watched a documentary on this one. So it's in the Salish Sea, which is the Pacific Northwest. And it's all in the same area, right? It's near mm-hmm. Vancouver and in that area. Yeah. In a lot of the cases, they have been able to link the parts to people that were involved in like accidents or suicide successful suicide attempts. But yeah, so the British Columbia area and Washington State. So since 2007, nearly 24 human feet have been found in sneakers, completely unattached to the bodies.
Oh, that's so...
Can you imagine?
No.
Oh. Yeah. The feet and the hands are like the first thing to go, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're in water and scavengers, like that part will detach
mm-hmm.
very quickly. So, but a lot of people are like, is it a serial killer? Is it like some weird human testing thing that's happening? And people are, it just happens to be that this area, there's a bridge that's pretty well known for suicides happening and boating accidents and things like that. So,
yeah, because if you look at they have like a map with like where each location is, it does look like a weird, like, this is where an active serial killer is dumping bodies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
Could be 21 body. They never specified if anything was impaired.
Could be. I mean, I don't know. So basically what they're saying is that they don't think it's anything related to like criminal activity, that it's more the fact that there's a bridge nearby where a lot of people will commit suicide. And then like boating accidents and things like that. And just the feet will separate from the body inside the shoe when it's in a body of water. That's like one of the first things to break down. So it's true. And they, at one point in the documentary, they were kind of looking at this one guy that had a pig farm nearby to see if maybe he was involved in some way, but they discounted that pretty quickly.
Well, and that's close to where like Robert Picton was.
Oh, that's probably him.
And then there was also Gary Ridgway, Green River Killer. They were kind of up in that general area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not surprising that their first thought might be like, oh, crap, not again.
Right. Fucking Gary Ridgway.
Ugh.
Blah. Yeah. Well,
let's not throw that out again. I don't need to be associated with like future.
Oh, we have some big hitters coming up, probably next season.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you got coming up, Blair? I know you have.
So I have a hometown macabre. We're going to go to Holcomb, Kansas. It is well known for the In Cold Blood murders. The Clutter family, which a very famous author by the name of Truman Capote had written a book about, and it is actually considered the very first true crime to ever exist. The concept of true crime.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going there. And then the letter U... It's going to get dark again because U is for Unit 731. So
we've got some government
mm-hmm.
human testing, experimentation, torture, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times.
Oh, yeah. Fun times. What do you have for V?
Well, I promised earlier this season when we covered the Hunter Kaifeck murders that I would do Villisca. So yes. I'm going to cover the Villisca acts. And I mean, I know it's been done before, but I'm going to throw in some more recent information. And yeah, I mean, that one's pretty dark and brutal. And
mm-hmm.
yep.
Not to interrupt you too much, I'm from an area near there.
I grew really? Up
with the axe murder. And because that's in Iowa, right?
Villisca, Iowa. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, my parents, that was one of their tourist attractions, that is, like, teenagers, they would go up into that area.
Fucked up.
a local little urban legend that you can stay in the house and stuff. So
that's fucked what? Up. What? Would you?
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Blair, would you?
No. Negative energy, man. Not allowed.
The famous last words, houses don't have memories. So. Anyway, anyone who's watched Amityville Horror is understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, we covered that too.
Yeah.
Mixed feelings about that whole story.
Me too. Me too.
After talking to Laura at length. And I mean, she's a friend of Lorraine. She was a friend of Lorraine Warren, Ed Warren, and she still had an opinion about the whole thing. And
she did.
I appreciated that she was honest about it. You know?
I agree. And I still think about the whole thing about how she still doesn't know what her dog was growling at.
Yeah, I don't discount that there could be some negative energy in that space and like some fucked up stuff because of what actually happened.
Right.
But the whole like what happened with the Lutz family afterwards felt very fabricated.
Definitely.
And sensationalized in order for them to make a profit.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
The evidence just points in that direction. So,
yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And then we have W, which is going to be for Wizard of Oz.
Hell yeah. That's filming be pretty dark.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That was a crazy, crazy scene filming that movie. And then we have our crossover episode, which we will be teasing about.
Yep.
We're not saying anything yet. And then and then we have Y, which, hey, listeners, we are still looking for topics for the Y is for You Pick episode. So please keep that coming over on the Facebook group. You can also email that to us as well if you'd like. Links below. But we're still looking for topics to cover. So please keep them coming.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a Y themed. It's just you pick. So you pick the topic, whatever the topic is.
Yeah. If you've been dying for us to cover something and we haven't done it, now's your time, people.
That's all I have for you this episode. Thank you for joining us, Nick and Jake. We appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you.
Sorry I messed with you and told you all a bunch of fake stories. Except for the one. For now. Stay safe, be kind, have fun,
and we'll shock you later.
We'll shock you later.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.